Thank you, members. I'd like to call the Tax Committee to order, and we do have a quorum member, so if somebody has time to take a look at the minutes, I'd appreciate that. I do want to tell members, there's a few things that are in your packets today that are related to previous committee member questions. One is the fiscal department gave us, compiled some information on the governor's budget proposal on the property tax aids that are in other parts of the budget, and that's this item here. And then Ms. Dalton provided for us an updated run as it relates to which cities are under the governor's proposed levy limits and which aren't, as it relates to, I think it was Representative Hillstrom was asking a number of questions about what tax year are you working off of. So that information is there. And then, members, what we want to do is just continue on today with the governor's budget proposal. I think we're going to have Commissioner Ines join us, or I'm not sure. I think we finished the property tax part of the governor's proposal, and we're going to look at all the other parts today, members. So I will leave it to the Department of Revenue to tell us what order they'd like to do what, and if you want to join us at the table. Is there a motion for the minutes? Representative Liebling.
Madam Chair, I move approval of the minutes of January 24th, 2007.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. Representative Liebling moves the minutes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The minutes are adopted. And one more piece. We want to have Representative Simpson is going to actually formally move the governor's bill, the Representative Simpson's bill, which members, it's House File, I believe, 304. Is that correct, Representative Simpson?
That is correct. Thank you.
Representative Simpson.
At this time, we would like to move House File 304 for possible inclusion into the tax bill. And at this time, we have the department with us, and we're going to finish going through it. So,
thank you, Representative Simpson. Thank you. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, thanks for having us back to go through the sales and income tax provision of the governor's tax bill. I guess I'll just start. I'll probably walk through the bill and then skip over the property tax provision, which we've already covered. And if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. Sections 1 and 2 of Article 1 are pertaining to the budget reserve account, and the governor is proposing putting an additional $47 million into the budget reserve, which would bring it from 653 to 700. He's also in that same section explicitly putting in law a target of 5% of annual general fund revenues as a target for the budget reserve. So for the 2008-2009 budget, that'd be a little over $800 million.
Excuse me, Commissioner, I apologize. I want to help members find where we're at. If you remember last time we were working with Commissioner, we have this document. I hope you put it in your save file. It has the revenue note on the front page. And then, I don't know, 6-7 pages in is the 2007 governor's tax bill summary, section by section. So it looks like this, members, and we're going to go through section by section. What Commissioner Ines did last time is he walked us through the property tax pieces. As you recall, we did the levy limits and those items. But he's starting again at section 1 and 2, which was not referenced, which is the budget reserve increase. So, members, if you don't have this, we let us know. You should have hung on to it. If not, we'll see if we can't make some more copies. Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sections 1 and 2 pertain, as I said, to the budget reserve. The governor is recommending an additional $47 million in the budget reserve to increase that to $700 million. There's currently, I believe, $350 in the cash flow account. So between the two, we're over $1 billion now. He also sets out a schedule for getting to 5% of general fund revenues, and that's in Section 2 of the bill. Section 3 of the bill is a property tax related provision. Section 4 is property tax. Sections 5 through 11 regard levy limits, which we've covered. Sections 12 and 15 are the next, and they are the military pension and pay exemptions. And many of you are familiar with this provision. The governor advocated for this last year. The pension is a four-year phase into 100% exemption for military retirement benefits. This year, he's expanded that to also include pay for military pay. The two of them combined, I believe, have a revenue impact. The pension subtraction is $4.3 million in 2008 and $9.1 million in 2009. And the expansion of the military base attraction is $1 million in FY 2008 and $2.1 million in 2009. Section
13. Excuse me, Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm having trouble finding the document. I'm looking around and seeing a lot of other people flipping through their documents, too. So I think it would be a lot more helpful if we could all have the document. Thanks.
Thank you for that, Representative Liebling. Members, is everybody not? Everybody needs one? Is that kind of where we're at? No, Representative Broad and I have ours, and I don't know what that says about all you guys, but okay. Members, did we get a clean document to the pages? Do you have one? We do. Okay. If anybody has a clean document, maybe you do, Commissioner. We'll have the pages run off and make 20 copies quick. I know, mine's all written over too. Okay. Okay, so now Representative Broad is going to contribute to help all the people who didn't put the things in the safe folder. I'm just kidding. What can we do here to proceed, Commissioner, while members are looking for this document? I don't know. What we were just on was the military item.
I could elaborate a little bit on the rationale for the governor advocating for the military.
Sure. That'd be appropriate, members. And so while we're waiting for everyone getting the information, we'll hear a little bit more about the military piece of the governor's proposal. Commissioner.
Madam Chair, yeah, the governor, as I said before, supported the pension subtraction in previous years. And really, I think his advocacy for that provision is twofold. One is, I think it's the recognition of the unique special service that military folks have paid to this country and the state. And secondarily, I think it's also an economic development acknowledgement. A lot of these folks, when they leave the military, are mid-career. They have a strong skill set. They're managers. They have leadership skills. And we want to retain them here in Minnesota. And they have options. And so I think this is an acknowledgement that we are in a competition with other states for talent, and many of the military folks that we'd like to keep them here in Minnesota. So I think it's kind of a twofold rationale for this proposal. One is the recognition of the service, but also economic development tool to keep these folks in Minnesota.
Commissioner, excuse me, Representative Earhart? Was it Earhart?
Well, Madam Chair, I thought you mentioned a big figure, like $1 billion for this. I don't think that's, maybe I misheard you.
No. Billion? No. Let me clarify that for you, Representative.
That's why we're going to get that piece of paper handed out.
Yeah, the Representative Earhart, the military pension subtraction for 2008 is $4.3 million.
Oh, million.
And then in 2009 is $9.1 million. It's a four-year phasing.
Okay, Madam Chair, this goes back to World War I, II, Vietnam, so forth. Anybody that has a military connected money and goes on forever now?
Commissioner Reines.
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, that is correct. That is correct.
How many other states have this, Madam Chair?
Commissioner?
My understanding, Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, there's 8 states that have 100% exemption for this sort of income. There's a number of other states that have a percentage of the pension excluded from taxes. I could get you that. In fact, Commissioner Clark Edwards is here. He could probably elaborate on that in more detail than I can.
Representative Earhart, Ms. Manzi is here. I don't know that she happens to just have that information with her, but if we're waiting for documentation, if Ms. Manzi wants to answer that question, I think she could give us some more accurate information on what the other states are doing in that area. Ms. Manzi, if you wouldn't mind joining us, and then we have Representative Solberg and Mullery on this issue as well. To this point. Representative
Mullery,
while Ms.
Madam Chair, there's, I think it's 3 states now do it, and we would be the 4th to do what they're requesting, which is having all of our pensions taxed except for them and then giving them a complete exemption. So we'd be either the 4th or the 5th state, unless there's been 1 or 2 in the last year.
Thank you. Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have a recently updated memo to interested persons, which I'll make available to the committee, on how other states tax military pension income. Of the 50 states and the District of Columbia, 9 do not have a general income tax. Of the remaining 42, 33 exempt at least a portion of military pension income, and an additional 2 provide a pension credit. So there are 7 states that do not exempt any portion of military pension income. And I can go through in more detail what they do if you'd like, or we can just make the memo available to the pages to copy or to distribute to you later.
Representative Earhart, did you want to have another little question here, or should we get that memo out to everybody? How would you like to proceed?
No, I just I was curious, Madam Chair, about what kind of future obligation you were doing for the state here, and thinking about some other folks that maybe like to have a pension exemption here, you know, the firemen, the police, and so forth.
Thank you.
Legislators.
Representative Earhart. And I see Representative Mulry has another point. I do want to ask, though, the states, just out of curiosity, that 9 don't have no income taxes. Are any of those states that just don't have an income tax?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, all but 2 of those states don't have any income tax at all. Tennessee and New Hampshire tax a portion of unearned income. In response to Representative Earhart's question, of the states with income taxes that exempt military pension income, there are only 2 of them that have an exemption that's specifically for military pension income. The rest of them allow the exemption of military pension income either as part of an exemption for all government pension incomes or for all pension income.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. Mm-hmm. And Representative Mulry.
Madam Chair, that's exactly the point I was going to make. What she read didn't at all give the accurate view. What she clarified then at the end is accurate. The other states exempt pension income. So if we're going to exempt pension income, then that's a different issue.
And I want to get to Representative Solberg, who's next. Commissioner and Ms. Manzi and committee, I think one thing that's going to be helpful as we proceed on some of these military provisions, and to the author, Representative Simpson, I think if Ms. Manzi could provide more, not just a memo for interested parties, but a table for the states so we can understand this. I think we all know, members, we're going to spend a lot of time on this. We have a bipartisan pile of bills on this issue. There are many people at this table who are authoring and co-authoring nuances of this particular provision and other things going on within taxation for the military. So what I don't want to do is spend too much time so we can get through the governor's bill today, and know that we will have a day where we will hear all of the bills from all of the authors on the military provisions. And I think it would be helpful for Ms. Manzi then to provide us with that information that day so we can just sort of kick it off, and we'll want to have veterans organizations come in to the committee that day, and we'll have a full airing of this provision and the nuances of this provision. Representative Solberg.
Just a point of history, maybe somebody can look up, I think it was 1985 or 86, when before that point Minnesota had an exemption for all pensions.
Yes.
Of $11,000, I think, per year. And Ms. Manzi maybe can give us some perspective of that. And I know it was a decision made by the legislature then that income is income. His income is income, like a house is a house, a house, a house. And there was a little bit of an unequal, how it was applied, application to that, particularly as it related to income for military people. And as a replacement for that, instead of reinstating it, we went down the road of providing the college credits for people, military people, as an attraction to have them be retained but in the military as well. So we have to be careful about how we go down this road, because there are the other program proved much more successful in retaining people into the National Guards and other military things in the state of Minnesota.
And Representative Solberg, thank you for that. I have not mentioned to Ms. Manzi, but I have mentioned to Mr. Michael that when we do the military hearing day, I am going to ask for 10 minutes from Mr. Michael and maybe Ms. Manzi to talk about the issue Representative Solberg just raised, through all the kind of big picture of this military pension issue and active pay. And what Representative Solberg is referencing is, I think it was called the senior exclusion, or I'm not sure, but Representative Solberg is right, that at one time all pension income was treated like this. And there was an express decision by the state of Minnesota to not do that. And so this is a piece of that. But we do want to have that full discussion. And we also want to talk about the part that the commissioner just called the economic development part, which others on the committee think of the migration effect of this taxing set of issues. So, if, you know, we do want to continue on with Representative Simpson's bill here. But I think Ms. Manzi has a point she wants to throw in. Or
Madam Chair, I just wanted to note that there is a table like you requested in that memo that looks at what all the other states do.
Okay, I apologize. She's already done it. See, what a great House research staff person we have. Commissioner Innes.
Madam Chair, thank you. Section 13 is another issue that this committee is familiar with, and that's the dairy investment credit. And that credit, it will be a $6 million credit, $50,000 per taxpayer.
And members, you should all have this now. Dairy credit, Section 13.
Qualifying expenditures include everything from acquisition and construction, improvement of buildings, equipment for dairy animal housing, confinement, animal feeding, milk production, and waste management. This is an issue the governor has advocated for the last couple of years, and unfortunately has not kind of gotten across the finish line, so it's here again, and basically the same format. I think Representative Erdahl has been the primary proponent of this in the House, and I got a feeling he'll probably be the chief author again this year. Section 14 is another idea that's been circulating around the Capitol here the last couple of years. It's a regional investment credit. The proposal in the governor's budget is modeled after Representative Thiessen's idea, and it's an investment credit to try to incent more venture capital for small and medium-sized businesses. Thiessen? And that idea is, I think, originated with Representative Norman. And then Representative Thiessen also took an interest in it. So.
And members, I think Representative Welty is carrying it this year. So you may know it in many forms, but same concept.
Absolutely. Section 16 pertains to the corporate income tax, and it is accelerating the phase in the single sale apportionment factor. In 2005, the legislation, the governor agreed to go to a single sales apportionment formula over a period of number of years. Current law has us at 100% sales in 2014. This would get us there by 2011. Sections 18, 22, and 23 is another perennial issue around capital. That's the capital equipment upfront exemption. As you guys are, many of you are aware of, the current law requires the company to submit a refund in order to get the sales tax exemption. This would move up to upfront sales tax exemption, at least for small businesses and for wood products industry. And the wood products industry exemption is a direct response to a report that was put together this fall by the wood products industry and commissioners and legislators. And it's a direct response to that report. We would like to make a little more progress on this, but as you all know, it's a relatively hefty fiscal note attached to this. I think going to 100% upfront exemption on this would be almost $100 million, $140 million actually.
Excuse me, Commissioner. Representative Paulson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. I was just going to compliment the governor on including this provision. I think on a bipartisan level, a lot of legislators have been talking about the need to go down this path, I think, and make this change. And I know single sales factor took many years to kind of get in the works, and hopefully we can do the same on this provision as well. I'm just curious. I think a lot of states do have this upfront provision, rather than having to apply for the refund. How many states in general, Simpson or Commissioner, you may be able to respond?
Manager, Representative Paulson, I'm not sure how many states have it. I would expect we're in the model. I would expect that there aren't many states that actually have an exemption that requires you to apply for a refund. And it was a function of some tight budget times, and we actually made it a little bit worse during this administration. We pushed back the refund dates from, I think, 60 to 90 or 90 to 120 days. And so we'd like to get back on track and get this to an upfront exemption. We especially hear it's a problem for small and medium-sized businesses that just don't have the in-house staff to spend a lot of time processing these refunds. And so we thought we'd start with the smaller businesses first and try to make some incremental progress towards eliminating this refund process altogether.
Representative Paulson.
Madam Chair, maybe this is one of those issues where we can make sure Minnesota is not an anomaly or an island, hopefully. So.
Thank you, Representative Paulson. Mr. Michael, do you happen to know Are we the only state doing this? I think that's a good question, and, you know, if you know the fact off the top of your head, I'd be interested to know it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not aware of any other state that does have that kind of mechanism, but I don't know that any don't have it either, so can't really say. Sorry.
Thank you. So we're all still guessing at this point, but we'll get that information. I think Representative Paulson raises a good point. And members, when you hear people say that all the shifts and gimmicks have been bought back, this highlights the fact that that's not true. Here's one right here that hasn't been bought back yet, and sometimes you'll hear legislators bipartisanly assert that they're all gone. They're not all gone. This is one, and so that is a good point. Commissioner, can you tell me, though, how did you define small business when you picked small business? Who exactly were we talking about there who would not have to go through the upfront process?
Well, as you can see, maybe it's not in the description, but the way we defined it is 20 or fewer employers or less than $1 million in annual revenues, gross revenue. And we have a limited pot of money, one-time money, in order to try to make some incremental progress on this. So, you know, we wish we could have drawn a line on a little larger business than that, but we thought we'd start making some progress. And hopefully, if there's some more one-time money in the February forecast or something else, this would be, I think, a high priority for the legislature and the governor.
And if I may, the wood products industry.
Yeah, there was some hard times up there in the northern Minnesota wood products industry. The governor convened a task force to come out with a number of recommendations. They came out with a report in mid-December, and one of the things that they flagged for us, one area in the tax area, was going to an upfront exemption for that industry. It's very capital intensive, purchased a lot of machinery, and so the governor thought that might be a good place to start. Please carve them out.
And Commissioner, I just wanted to give you the option to make that point, because I think there might be members who might think that, you know, Senator Bach, this was a Senate provision. We'd like a House one then, too. Just kidding. But that's right, members. There is a Timberland study that was done. I know Representative Coonan's aware of it, and there was that recommendation there. But I wanted people to understand that this wasn't just selected of all the industries out there. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Lencheski. The small business portion or qualifier doesn't apply to the wood products industry purchases, so you don't have to be a small business to get this refund.
That's correct.
You do not have to be. So, in other words, any size logging operation or wood products industry would the qualifier doesn't apply to the wood products provision.
Commissioner,
Madam Chair, Representative Deal, that's correct.
Okay, thank you,
Representative Solberg.
Commissioner. The definition of wood products industry, do you have that? I mean, is it a very large company that wants to expand? I got a wood products industry that's looking at a huge paper machine.
Right.
Commissioner.
We try to make it as comprehensive as possible. Let's put it that way, Representative Solberg. And includes pulp, paper, paperboard manufacturing, sawmills, plywood, veneer, millwork, prefab wood building manufacturing. And if there's something we missed, please let us know.
Okay. I'm sure one of the things that's happening, though, there probably isn't very much cost to that, because a lot of the loggers aren't buying any equipment, period. You know, equipment issues are huge, but they're not buying. They're not selling any logs.
Thank you. Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair, I'll skip it for now as a small point on this.
Thank you. Commissioner, section number?
Section
19.
Section 19 and 21 are somewhat related, and there are two sales tax exemptions for transportation-related expenditures. So the first one is a sales tax exemption for purchases made by DOT from the Trunk Highway Fund. And the second one is for sales tax exemption to commuter rail, and that would apply to the North Star Corridor, the 40 miles from Big Lake to downtown Minneapolis. And so those are two targeted sales tax exemptions for transportation.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair. Good staff points out the thing, and going back to the wood products industry, that it does not include logging. So the ones that are would probably not buy are excluded anyway. So it does not include logging, manufactured wood cabinets, and so forth. So the logging industry is in the tank, but the proposal doesn't include them for the exemption.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Solberg. Members, Section 19 and 21, questions on that?
Madam
Commissioner?
Chair, to that point, Representative Solberg, my understanding is that the loggers are already exempt under current law.
Okay, thank you.
They already have it all funded.
Thank you, Commissioner. Did you all members see all that dueling staff activity taking place back there? And that was just wonderful to see, and we do miss you, Dr. Wilson. Commissioner Innes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 20 is a sales tax exemption for potential Thompson West expansion in Eagan. That's, I think, it's about a $9 million cost over 4 years, and that would include two data centers and the office building that would potentially house 2,000 employees.
Excuse me, I know there will be questions on this, Commissioner. Representative Coles, I think, is back on either 19 or 21. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Section 21, the commuter rail sales tax exemption. Does the Metropolitan Council or other entities, and this is for either you, Madam Chair, or for the Commissioner, are they exempt from paying sales tax when they purchase capital equipment, buses, or are they already exempt?
Representative Coles, I'm not sure who we should ask to answer that question. I'm looking around. I don't know on the Met Council. I do know that on the light rail system in Hennepin, they are exempt. And I think my understanding is Anoka is looking for similar treatment for North Star. Maybe Representative De La Forest, not guessing his opinion on that, that could tell us exactly what's happening there. But I don't know the Met Council answer. If there's somebody, Mr. Michael will look on that. But I think this provision is trying to get similar treatment for commuter rail North Star that the light rail system has.
I understand what the provision's trying to do. I was curious why we were maybe doing it for something if we're not doing it for everything. I was just curious. It seems to me if we're looking to do transit, we should maybe be looking at all transit. Maybe we should be providing the Met Council with a sales tax exemption or an exemption from tax when they're purchasing equipment for bus transit instead of just looking at rail.
So point well taken. I'm going to give Mr. Mike a little more time to look as Representative Hillstrom has a question. And I know that we do some bus bonds for the Met Council, and I don't know how that works at the actual point of purchase. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine was actually about the other section. You talked about giving some tax-exempt status to one particular company, and I missed the name. I'm sorry. But is it typical that we put in a bill like this, a provision just for one company, and if so, you know, why this one and not a different one? And
right. Madam
Commissioner,
Representative Hillstrom, we have done this. Saying it's typical probably be going too far, but it's not atypical either. There's a number of projects that we provided a sales tax exemption similar to this. I guess that the most obvious example is the Job Z program. Any big project in a Job Z program, we have a little over 290 of them that had a construction component, was eligible to use the sales tax exemption on construction materials on that construction component. So that's current law under the Job Z program. In addition, over the years, there's been a bunch of individual bills, special legislation for particular projects. I know Hubbard Broadcasting got one for their satellite facility. Northwest Airlines got one for the maintenance facility in Duluth. Farmland Foods down in southwest Minnesota got one. I mean, all the ethanol facilities, for the most part, that they're located in the Job Z have gotten the sales tax exemption. So, you know, it's not the general rule, but it's also not super.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question was this the only request then that the governor got, or how did he make the decision that this one was to be included in his budget and nothing else was?
It was the only request I was aware of, Representative Hillstrom. And we began having discussions, and I was over at Deed at the time that this issue was first flagged, and we had negotiations with Thompson how to make Minnesota the premier site for this expansion, or the most viable site. And so we had negotiations in July and August, and I went to the governor in November and said, you know, in order for us to be have an opportunity to secure this great expansion, we need to do a little to kind of make ourselves more competitive with some of the competing sites. And the governor's response was to do what's reasonable and prudent and in the taxpayer's best interest, and so we came up with this, what we think is a very limited temporary sales tax exemption that's going to generate 2,000 plus jobs over the next few years, and potentially up to 5,000 jobs.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
One follow up. It's my understanding that the Mall of America was something that's also out there looking for a sales tax exemption, and I'm just curious as to if this one is in, why that one was out.
Commissioner Innes.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom. My understanding of the Mall of America proposal was something different. It's not a sales tax exemption on the construction materials. It's more analogous to a sales tax tip or increment. And so it's a little bit different animal than this. And this is a very short-term, targeted sales tax exemption. My understanding of that, it's a little more broad-based, a little more long-term than this particular provision would be.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have Representative Mulry and Solberg. Is Mr. Michael, are you ready for us yet? I'd like to first go back and answer Representative Cole's question on the Met Council, if we can.
Madam Chair, the Met Council has an exemption for the purchases of its vehicles and repair parts to equip operations for its transit operations. I had thought there was a special light rail exemption. Ms. Dalton, I can't find it. So I think that general exemption would include the light rail vehicles and repair parts that are purchased. So.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Michael, same thing for the opt-outs, or is it just Met Council, or I'm going to make you continue to page through that book, I'm afraid.
Mr. Michael, do you know on the opt-outs?
I don't know about the opt-outs.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Michael can get back to me or the committee. I don't want to take him away from what's happening here, but you know, my area, and there are other members of the committee who have opt-out service as opposed to the Met Council providing transit service in their area, and I guess I'd be curious to know if they have the same favorable tax treatment that we're providing to the Met Council and potentially to North Star and other commuter projects.
Thank you, Representative Coles, and I would ask that staff try to provide that information for us later. I would anticipate we'll hear those provisions actually as part of the omnibus transportation bill is probably where they'll get carried. That's not completely determined yet. To Thompson West, that's where we were, and we've got a couple of people on the list. Members, I do want to tell you, some you just heard some that have been raised, Hubbard, Northwest Airlines, the Twins, Jobsies, a lot of the ag processing part of the economy, those private entities. You mentioned ethanol, Commissioner. I had asked Mr. Michael to put together a list for us for all the things that have had these exemptions, and then on a similar track, the Senate was doing the same thing, and went a little further back, and so the Senate staff is working with Mr. Michael right now to try to get the most comprehensive list, I think starting since 1971, to see kind of what's been done and what hasn't, and we will provide that to the full committee when we've got it all together. It should be in the next couple of days. So to Representative Mulry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out that it's interesting that the commissioner first justification of this would be comparing it to Jobs E zones, which we were told we were doing to help needy areas. And what really immediately strikes my mind is that the highest unemployment in the state is in North Minneapolis. There's other, the next highest is in South Minneapolis, and the third, I believe, is St. Paul. And the governor's office fought strongly against any kind of a Jobs E whatsoever to help businesses going in that would produce jobs in North Minneapolis. But now we're going to do that for area of Eagan, Apple Valley, et cetera, which is not exactly what is usually thought of as one of the neediest areas in the state.
Representative DeLaForest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for the Commissioner. I've seen numbers bandied about in the media regarding all the money that's going to flow in, the number of jobs, et cetera. Do we have any legally binding guarantees from the beneficiary of this largesse that they will create that number of jobs, and are there penalties if they do not, or do we have any other language, or can we expect it that will require them to confer a certain economic benefit on the state in exchange for this special tax treatment?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative DeForest, the bill in front of you does not have that sort of language, Representative. Yeah. You know, there are plenty of examples among economic development packages that we do have clawback provisions. GovZ actually has a very strong clawback provision if you don't meet the wage thresholds and the job creation thresholds. That's not been a typical way that we've gone in the past with sales tax exemptions, but there's no saying we couldn't go in that direction. If there is, the committee saw the need to do something like that and say, if you don't create X number of jobs at a certain wage level, there could be a clawback provision. We do that in other parts of the law. It's something worth looking at.
Commissioner, that you mentioned those clawback provisions. Weren't they added after JobZ was created and a few years later legislators thought there wasn't enough? No? Getting a head shake from Mr. Moe. Okay. Other questions? If not, we'll move Representative Solberg.
Just a couple of quick questions. And maybe this goes to Mr. Michael. Checking furniture and fixtures, tax exemptions for that, that's mobile stuff that can be, disappear from an office real fast and go to another particular thing. So usually when we have tax exemption, we have something that stays. Like construction material, you can't move the building very easy. So I would want to have some kind of a history on that type of thing. And then my next question is, for this particular company, are there competitors in Minnesota or close by?
No, just
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, there certainly are competitors. They are probably the number one global competitor in this field. There's nobody in Minnesota that I would consider,
don't offend anybody, Commissioner.
In this field, but they'd be in better position to comment on that sort of thing than I would.
Thank you, Commissioner. And Representative Solberg, we'll ask Mr. Michael. I noted that, too, when I read that provision, the furniture. I thought that was a unique the provision Excel, Thompson West request is unique enough as it is. And then the furniture provision hit me the same way. I think there's also tools being exempted in there as well in the fine print. So we'll ask Mr. Michael to get back to you, Representative Solberg, and other members who are interested on that particular provision. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say that Representative Del Forest brings up a good point because, Commissioner, it's not that I'm opposed to the proposal at all. I'd like to see more of it, but I can give you two examples of at least in Iron Range Resources, one where we put provisions in, like you're suggesting, Representative De La Forest, and those were Northwest Airlines, that call center in Chisholm. About 3 years ago, Representative Solberg, Northwest Airlines was going to close a call center, and ours was rumored to be the one to close, but because there was a payback of $10 million in a jobs created an amount that there was a ceiling and a floor, and they would have had to pay us all back, they shut down the call center in Detroit instead. The one where we didn't put anything, which I voted against, even though I asked Representative Solberg to vote with me, and I couldn't get anybody to vote with me to kill it, was a turnkey operation where we had no provisions at all, and a year and a half later Sykes closed the building and walked away and made $4 million off of our economic development project. I think ended up selling the building for about $2 million, but it's a good suggestion by a moderate Republican, so you should, who may have an amendment, I don't know, who used to be a Democrat too, I might.
Well, we're going to need a little more history on that last sentence.
Well, his parents were, I think, my lawyers.
That's news to me, so we'll have to have that meeting with Representative De La Forest.
We have a policy, Madam Chair, in this committee.
if you sit on the committee long enough, everybody's a ranger. Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair and Representative Rucker, I just read that they're expanding one of those call centers. Is that the one that's left? They're going to have 36 more callers to it?
Representative
Rukavina. It was in the paper in the last couple of days.
We've got two call centers that are still going, so I don't know if it was Delta Dental or Blue Cross.
It was Northwest Airlines because they're putting on a series of new planes in there.
Well, actually, Representative Earhart, we did a year ago when the last $940,000 of forgiveness was on the table, negotiate a higher number, and so that probably is what they're doing there then, because we actually brought up the number to about 515 or whatever the number was jobs. So they were below that, and they promised to bring it up, so maybe that's it. And what I might add, while I do have the floor, Madam Chair, that of all the call centers that Northwest Airlines has, they say that they can understand Rangers better than anybody else in the world. So I want that for the record, because you oftentimes say we don't talk proper English. But you ain't going to get away with that no more.
Dr. Earhart, further?
Well, I didn't say anything about not being able to speak proper English. But I think you may be right.
Representative Solberg. Okay, and Commissioner, section number, what are we on now?
Section,
I think we're on 24.
24, is that 12? Is that 12?
Is that right? Job Z?
Yeah, Section 24, Job Z. Under current law, the Job Z program will expire in 2015. This would change a law to say, once you sign a subsidy agreement, you get 10 years of benefits from the time you sign the subsidy agreement. The program still has a sunset date in 2015, so there would be no new entrants into the program after that date. But this would basically say, from the time you sign a subsidy agreement, you get 10 years of Job Z benefits. And what we're noticing in the Job Z program as the years pass is that the demand for the job is dissipating. And in order to keep this as a viable program on a going forward basis, giving 10 years of Job Z benefits from the point of the subsidy agreement seems to make sense.
Questions, members, on Job Z on this provision?
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Solberg.
We'll have all kinds of hearings on Job Z. Are you going to schedule some kind of a hearing on some of the reports that are in our book?
Yes.
The but-for test is what I'm interested in.
Representative Solberg, we are, I'm not sure if you were in here yet, but we're going to hear the military provisions in a day. We're going to have to take a day on the dairy credit bills. There's lots of them. Okay. This is a similar set of issues, and there are many people who would like to either extend or limit. And so we do need more time. We need time for public testimony on these issues.
Thank you.
But, Commissioner, maybe you can, I'm just curious as to, you know, you've been around this committee bipartisanly in the Senate, and you know that we are a very divided group bipartisanly. Big fans of Job Z here, both Dems and Republicans. Big anti-Job Z folks here, both Dems and Republicans. And I'm curious as to if you could tell me, did the governor consider some limits to Job Z, some reporting? I see an expansion. But I think, as you know, in the wee hours of Tax Conference Committee the last number of years, this has been a high priority for lots of people to get some limits on this program, to at a minimum get some reporting on this program. Can you comment as to sort of the silence on that bucket of issues out there?
Sure. Yeah, Madam Chair, you know, as you know, this bill passed in 2003, and I believe every year since that we've tweaked the program. And, you know, sometimes you have to live with the program for a while and tweak, and you realize there's some unintended consequences for the program as originally drafted. For example, the original bill that passed allowed retail. And we realized that probably wasn't the way we wanted to go. That wasn't the intent of the program. It was mainly to target at manufacturing and value-added sorts of manufacturing. So every year it's gone through a different iteration. And I think it's a better product today than it was when we first passed it. The 10-year extension, it's actually not 10-year, 10-year of Job Z benefits, is actually less than the original bill. That was 12 when it first passed. So I think the governor's saying, you know, what's the tipping point to make this a real viable, powerful economic development tool? You know, there's not an exact science to it. We came up with 10 years. You know, we've had a lot of robust discussions about this program, and we think it's a great program, and for the most part, it's serving the purpose it was intended to serve. You know, and one of the big debates is how much local control should there be on this program and how much should be at the state level. We have, as a general rule, said the locals are in the best position to decide when and where they want to use this tool. So for the most part, it's the local official at the local level making the decision, determining the but-for test, and saying this works for our community. Some parts of the state have used it very heavily. Other parts of the state have said, you know what, it's not for us. We'd rather use tax increment financing or abatement or some other tool. So, you know, we've really left it to the individuals at the local level to make the decision about how they want to utilize this program. They do submit reports to us saying whether they're meeting their wage thresholds and their employment thresholds. So, and if they're not in compliance, DEED is the agency that writes letters and says, you know, get in compliance. DEED and Revenue would be the agencies that would impose the clawback provisions. But you know, this program is going to continue to evolve, I believe, and you know, the governor's not foreclosed from saying maybe we need to, you know, revisit this again and maybe put some more parameters on it. But as a general rule, we think this program has delivered on what it promised. And you're always going to find exceptions where you say, you know, here's a project that would have happened no matter what, with or without jobs. That's true of almost every economic development program. And we think, as a general rule, the locals have been very reasonable and prudent in how they've used this program. And I think there'll be a time to have a more thorough presentation of it. Paul Moe can recite verse and line about the program, all the virtues of this program. But I think when all said and done, the positive far outweighs the problem for the program.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. We have Representative Hillstrom on the list. Commissioner, I do want to point out, though, the issue you raised about the local control, I think, is a lot of the problem. I would say, you know, we do let locals make local decisions through TIF since the state got out of the TIF business and through abatement, because if they want to abate their local taxes, great. But when, you know, a local decision to abate a state tax, now that's a different item. And that's, you know, really what's going on there is exempting all kinds of state taxes made by a local decision above and beyond, you know, the hard feelings between who's paying there and who's not, when they came in, and the guy who's been on Main Street forever. But I do think, you know, you are very much aware of all the issues people see with this program and all the good people see with the program. And I do think, you know I'm not a proponent of the program, was very strong opponent. But what I would say is, you know, when things get in, they usually stay in. Hard to get them out. But I think for those who are advocates for Jobsies, they ought to think about that limiting and reporting is a way to keep something alive. I think we just saw in the paper in the last couple of days, and now the cost is looking to be about $100 million. That's a big chunk of money. And so when these things can start only a few years ago and they're up to $100 million, I think it started at $7 million. That's a lot of money. So I really hope you will encourage the executive level to think about what might be some restraints that they can live with as we go forward. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern also is that the state auditor is supposed to be doing the auditing on Jobsies, and it has just been ruled in the court that the TIF that was supposed to be used to pay for these audits cannot be used. And so there will be a bill that has to come forward to change that. So right now, the funding source for the audits, you know, is non-existent. So I hope that as this moves forward, you also are supportive of figuring out some accountability pieces as well.
Thank you for that, Representative Hillstrom. And members may not have been aware about that, but that is another issue that we're probably going to need to deal with one way or another this year. Other questions on Jobs E? If not, Commissioner, section, did you have anything left in the federal update?
That's it. You guys are
we through it
with the federal update. We thank you for helping pass that early. It's going to be signed by the governor tomorrow, I believe.
And members, I believe there's a press conference or a governor's signing tomorrow, so everybody is welcome to come at 2:30. And so we have a little time left, members. So now, any questions on any parts of the governor's proposal? We've got the military bucket issues, the dairy single sales, the upfront exemption. We've got all the property tax pieces in the bill. So, members, any questions on any of it? I know the property tax part is probably of most interest, and it's people are taking a while to figure it all out, what's going on in there. And maybe if there are no questions, Ms. Dalton can clarify, if she's here again, which cities now, the question about which cities would fall under levy limits and which wouldn't, any changes to this handout. Did you want to join us, Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the handout that was in your packet today is the most recent one we have. It will change again slightly once we have the certified levies, which I understand from the department we should have by the end of this week. And then there may be a few more cities who join if their certified levy is less than their truth in taxation levy and they are close to it. But right now there are 87 cities who are subject to the limits using the truth in taxation levies.
Questions from members on this provision or on this set of cities? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually for the Commissioner. has the decision been made on which set of numbers they're going to base this on, and is it this, the 2007 numbers and the glitch that was brought to the attention during the last meeting? Has that been talked about or adjusted? Or?
We have talked about it. We haven't made a final decision on what the adjustment would be, but we appreciated staff flagging that for us. You know, I don't have an answer for you at this point, Representative, but we wanted to make sure everybody knew kind of the universe of cities that would be impacted by a levy limit of this nature, and so we wanted to at least give you a snapshot of the potential communities that would be impacted. Peggy, you want to?
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I have talked to the people who model for the Department of Revenue, and they are using the 2007 data right now, and so that's what I'm using.
Thank you. Other questions? Commissioner, one item that we talked about some issues in the governor's budget here that are tax issues that are transportation related, and so they're appearing here in the tax portion on our revenue estimate. On the other hand, there is the market value sales tax transfer to transportation funding that is not here, and that's a transportation issue as well. Could you go through that for committee members so people can understand what the governor is proposing to do with that piece of the funding for transportation?
Right. And that will be appearing in the transportation bill, funding bill. But essentially what he's doing is dedicating the sales tax on motor vehicle leases in the same way that the constitutional amendment that passed dedicated it. So a 60-40 split. And that would be dedicated in the same way. And I believe the dollar amount, I'm not sure I have it on my, I'm trying to think, I think it's about $40 million a year. My memory serves me right.
64.
And then, yeah, I think that's, so it's got $40 million in 08, 09, 54, and 10 and 11. So it'll be dedicated in the same way as the constitutional amendment that was approved this fall. There's a few other issues too, Madam Chair, that are tax issues, certainly from the purview of your committee, that are not being carried in the governor's tax bill. You're familiar with the compliance initiative that we're coming forward with. Maybe there's a couple of
county, one-time county money
issues that certainly you have jurisdiction over. The one-time money on the county aid is another. I think there's also a rededication of the sales tax on contaminated grant program. And I think it's going to be carried in the economic development bill, but it'll certainly be within the purview of your committee. So there's a few other issues interspersed with other funding bills that you may ultimately see.
Thank you for that. And Representative Simpson is going to keep us all informed where all these things are going, Commissioner, as we go through the process and learn more about the governor's proposal. Are there other questions for the commissioner or anyone in the Department of Revenue? If not, members, we are going to adjourn early. We are not meeting tomorrow, and we will let you know about Wednesday. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.